Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to tug of war champion Jenny Green, always the anchor of a brilliant week here on 2FM. Jenny's back tomorrow at 3. It's Monday, the 17th of May, and this is Game On.
And coming up today, when goalkeepers become goal scorers.
The 4 minutes have elapsed. It's a corner kick far side to left. Alisson is up from the back. In it comes. Alisson! Oh, would you believe it? The Liverpool goalkeeper in injury time has won it for Liverpool. What a dramatic and remarkable finish here at the Hawthorns. Liverpool close the gap on the top four. Leicester and Chelsea are under real pressure. And a dramatic finale. And Liverpool celebrate. They've snatched it right at the death. 2-1.
And we'll hear from Stephen Kelly. He's standing by to discuss that and Leicester's FA Cup win over the weekend. Plus in Gaelic games, we've Niall Moran and Aidan O'Rourke on a weekend of markers being laid down for the summer ahead.
I think Galway today, they've sent out a message. They've sent a message to Limerick. They've sent a message to John Coyley that, hey, we're not going to be too far away. And I think it's something exciting to look forward to in this championship.
Oh, they're in again. And Clifford soccer style with a lovely dummy has just side-footed the ball into the back of the net. That was David Clifford, a little dummy to send the defender while skidding across the ground in front of him. A swing of the hips, goalkeeper taken out by that, and the ball just eased into the corner of the net.
Plus, we'll have the rest of our weekend sporting highlights and all the news between now and Tara Stewart at 7 o'clock.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FN. We've no Marie Crowe this evening. Damien O'Mara is in the driving seat. I was talking to her earlier and Alison was her highlight of the weekend. No surprises there, I suppose.
I'd say she was delighted with it.
I suppose you look at the GAA, it was all about controversy, really. Rules and regulations and who's right and who's wrong. So she was hardly going to go for that. But Damien, had you a highlight from the weekend just past?
Well, I don't want to steal your thunder because you're probably going to big up the Kildare footballers who did a job on Cork.
Have you no doubt I am.
Especially
with your man standing in Cork City.
With my Tipperary heritage, I was going to go for Jason Ford's late free, which denied Cork victory in the hurling. But I'll commit as a couple. I think Rashid Adeleke's 200 metres women's record broken over the weekend. More Olympians, the women's four and the lightweight women's double. I think which brings Ireland's tally of potential Olympians to 66 across 14 sports for the Tokyo Games. I have to say, I was in the car on the way home from Nolan Park in Kilkenny yesterday and I was flicking around the various radio stations, and Alison for me has to be there as well, if I'm allowed. Double up on that. What a moment. First time it's in Liverpool was founded in June of 1892. It's the first time a goalkeeper has scored in the history of the club. And you consider the couple of months that he's had on a personal level, what it must have meant to him. So, but in typical Liverpool fashion, I was Laura Lee, who works so brilliantly on the programme with us, is here in her Liverpool goalkeeper's jersey from last season. We'll have to get you one from this season. This season's one. No, she's here.
They're sold out today.
She's here in a vintage Liverpool goalkeeper's jersey from last season. I was kind of joking beforehand that it'll just be like Liverpool, like 96 minutes played against Crystal Palace at the weekend. Alisson will probably concede a penalty to allow Crystal Palace get a result, which will deny Liverpool Champions League football. So I hope that's not the case.
Well, who knows what it'll be. But I think Alisson's interview afterwards, where he spoke about his dad who died in February, only 57 years of age, very emotional. And I must say, I enjoyed the line where he said, it's probably the best goal I've ever scored, considering it's the only one he'd ever scored.
But Ruby, just on that point about his dad, what's incredible about that? I think we can look at these sports players and we all talk about how much they get paid per week. But, you know, and we know it's an honour for them to do it. But I know it was COVID and everything, but just for him not to be around his family at that time as well, you know, I think we take it for granted as well sometimes that, you know, they're people and that, you know, this emotion, it was brilliant to see it.
It was, but that's what all sports people are at the end of the day, Dunica. They might be high profile or some of them pay better than others, but at the end of the day, they are humans as well. And I think his story is very evident of that.
But just on it as well, like when you look at it, it wasn't just one of these situations of a goalkeeper coming forward, launching himself through the air and somehow loafing the ball into the back of the net. Like the technique and the body movement mid-air, considering one of his teammates was blocking the flight of the
ball. He is Brazilian, like.
Yeah, but Shakimir, like he's a goalkeeper. Yeah, to be okay, fair point. Yeah, he's got more natural skill in his body than the rest of us, more inherited muscle memory.
But I'm with you, Damien. And normally you see the keepers coming up and they're just in the way, aren't they? And you're going, what are they at? You know what I mean? It's just, I think for me, when I see them going up, I wonder, are they just there to distract and take away when hopefully one of your strikers or better players can actually do something?
Maybe, but I mean, how many kids set out to be goalkeepers? Like, I mean, most people probably end up in goal at some stage, but do many kids set out at the young age thinking, I'm going to be a goalkeeper? They learn to play everywhere and then they end up back in goal, I would have thought.
Yeah.
It's like the second row, Donica.
I was just about to say, you have to be a kind of special person to want to play these certain roles. And goalkeeper, would be, especially in hurling, who would be a hurling goalkeeper? No chance.
What are your highlights, gentlemen? Who wants to jump in first?
Well, it was lean Connacht, for me, I'll be honest.
Munster,
with,
yeah,
rugby-wise, it was quite light, I'll be honest with you. So it wasn't coming from there. But I was lucky enough to be down in Kinmare, down with Jenny and the kids, and we were in Kerry. And just watching David Clifford, just you played the clips there, Damien. It was just, I love when you can talk about people, you know, and the different types of goals. You know, the way people are chatting, oh, which one did you prefer? Which was your favourite? The soccer kind of one. And I just think, Kerry look like they haven't ate since they lost to Cork. They just look so hungry, and I love when big players step up and show the way. And look, I think his own personal performance was incredible, but I think, you know, just seeing Kerry back at that point was certainly a lift.
He looked like Stephen Kenny could do it him.
Yeah. And then admitted afterwards he played centre-back growing up as a kid, so you know where that footwork came from. You kind of forget he's only 22, because he's one of these guys that was been spoken about for so long before he made the breakthrough to make his senior debut in 2018. Like I was looking at, someone was saying today, I think he's only made 13 appearances for the Kerry seniors when you look at everything, or maybe that's just championship appearances. But is he destined to go down in the pantheon of one of those I managed to see David Clifford in the flesh type of players?
If he stays sound, yes. If he has that look with injury. But I mean, every player, I suppose, in any sport has to have that. But if he has it, he most certainly could. And then they'll be judged on what they win as well. Yeah. I mean, you look at great players, if you're not on winning sides, yeah, you get overlooked.
But that's the point, Ruby. You know, he's got to drive it, doesn't he? He has to actually, because not being harsh, we were lucky to have someone like Brian O'Driscoll. But what he actually managed to do was bring the standard of everyone else up around him. You knew training with him, you had to train better because his talent was so bright, if you know what I mean. So I know they've gone a different way with the leadership side of it, but you can lead in different ways with your performance. And he certainly did that for me. I just thought he was incredible at the weekend.
Donica, can I ask you on that? How much of that is a conscious driving of the culture by a player? Like, did O'Driscoll go in and go, okay, he's honest enough to realise he's, you know, the player he was, and he's going to drag other people there? Or is it just the aura that comes around playing with someone that has that talent?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, I'll be completely honest. When you're around him, you actually have to train better. You have to give him, as a forward, you wanted to get better ball to Brian, because you know, if you put him in the right positions, he was going to be able to do something magic. So it's just knowing that you have a talent like that. But he was never quite preachy, or, you know what I mean, asking the rest of us to drive it on. You just knew if you gave him the potential, if we were able to, you know, use him properly, we've a game winner. You know, we've someone that's different to all the rest. And you know, I think looking at David Clifford, that's probably a role now that he has to take up. You have to kind of raise the boats around him and make sure that, you know, that he drags everyone with him.
Ruby, your highlight?
My highlight was probably, I know Cork were down to 14 men, but it's still a big deal for Kildare to go down to Turles and beat them 2-12 to 14 points. I thought Jack O'Connor's side were brilliant, and it was great to watch the Lily Whites getting their head in front, even if it was the league. You know, Kildare's relatively small in terms of success compared to Cork, so it's nice to claim a big scalp every now and then. Keep the Kerry men happy as well.
I was covering it for Saturday Sport, and you know, you looked at the list of players that are out through injury for Kildare and work commitments and army tour of duties and retirements and everything else, but then Jack O'Connor comes out afterwards and says, like, we've changed over half the panel from the previous year. And you know, it's only sometimes when you're standing near a team you realise, like, the amount of kids that were on that team, you know, in terms of the under 20s from the last couple of years who've come through. So I don't want to put pressure on them, but geez, there's a generation there who are looking to step forward and do that jersey proud.
There's only one problem. They're in Leinster. That means you have to play Dublin to get out of Leinster. That's just a one unfortunate thing at right now for even for that Kildare team.
Well,
somewhere along the way, someone will beat Dublin.
I was going to say, if they stay long enough, you know, if they were to have like a 10, 15 year career, they might get a Dublin blip somewhere along the way.
Oh, with a bit of luck, hopefully they will. But somewhere along the way, someone's going to have to beat Dublin at some stage. But Donegal Rugby, I must say, I thought Connacht were immense.
Yeah, they were great. It was another brilliant weekend of Interpros. It really was. I know you're trying to rub it in, but Connacht were. But Munster knew what was coming as well, Ruby. You make 6 changes to your pack alone. You take 50 points from Leinster. You know what's coming down the barrel, you know. And I think, to be fair, players like Conor Fitz, they were brilliant and fully deserving of their victory. I must say, though, I know CJ had a bit of a pop off Dan Jones afterwards, and I watched it back today. I thought he was really, really poor. I was really frustrated with him, not only with some of the decisions, and I know we'll go on about the knock-ons and the lead up to the tries and stuff like that, but just there's a few times there he was getting in the passing channel for Craig and just his positioning. And I know he's a police officer and he's after taking a bit of time out, but I just thought you're not meant to say it in rugby, you're never meant to really have a pop off the ref. Where I was kind of delighted CJ spoke up a little bit, because I thought he was really good.
He might have gotten Craig's path, right? But he was nowhere near Billy Holland for the first try.
So just on it though, and we've seen a few of these, and look, I don't want to make
excuses. We're not blaming Billy Holland either. No, kicked over his head, he'd no one lifted him.
If you look at that, I actually turned it off today on 27 minutes because there was enough stuff frustrating me that I'd said I'd leave it off. On that, Jack O'Donoghue, who was down injured after that score and wasn't back in his position, and I think we all made a big thing of it when Owen Farrell was told, normally you don't kick off till everyone's right in their spot, captain puts up his hand and he can fire away. And Jacko's still on the retreat. If he's there and he's on the front lift from Billy Holland, Billy takes that ball and you maul it out. I'm not excusing the skill should have been executed better by that pod, and the tidy up should have been better by, I think it was Shane Daly behind him, who was kind of crumbing in behind him. It's a brilliant finish by Sammy Arnold, and I don't want to take anything away from him. He did a great job of scoring in the corner, but it's just, they're small little things that you'd like the ref to keep an eye on.
Is that gamesmanship, or is that just quick thinking? We're here, ready to go, and you exploit an opportunity.
100%. But Damien, I think we're going to be chatting more about it when we get to the hurling and the football in a while. What level do we go to? You know, like 100% win at all costs. But is that what, you know, like, if, and I'm saying it here, we shouldn't speak poorly of refs, but I think refs need a duty of care as well, to make sure they're not only in charge of the rules, but they're in charge of the spirit of the game and making sure you conduct yourself correctly. I've always felt, I know with Nigel Owens, he called us in at one point, and I've seen him doing it in Leinster matches before. I remember him just telling us, the standard isn't good enough here, this needs to be better. He gave out to a few of us. He was there, you're hoping to play international 2 weeks' time and you're playing this at this level. Up your standard. So I just thought, you know, to restart without a player back in position is a bit harsh. And it was little stuff like that annoyed me about his performance. 100%. Look, team, when it comes to TMOs, they've better angles than we even see, so I'm not going to criticise any of the decisions that went down to that, and I don't want to take away from Connacht's performance. They went and grabbed it, they really did, but I was a little bit disappointed with Dan Jones's performance.
What about the niggle then? You saw Conor Marmion having to go at Ben Healy, and then everyone jumped in, subs included.
Yeah.
There was plenty of niggle there.
And Ruby, we used to be really careful when you came up against Connacht. you can't get involved in it. You, like, they have more niggle than you will ever want. If you know what I'm saying, there's teams that are hungrier than you, and you have to just be a little bit too busy for it. We would have all, like, I played up there with John Muldoon, was abusing guys, well, shouting and roaring at guys like John Hayes, and you just have to keep your cool. You know, like, you have to put it out in performance. I just think, you know, I'm a fan of that kind of want battle and the bit of hunger, but sometimes you don't take on the hungriest dogs in town, you know. And to be fair,
so do you think Munster got sucked in and let themselves down?
Well, just they got involved in little bits like that. I think, you know, I remember guys like Marcus Horn would channel the aggression. He was there like, we can't waste time getting involved and pushing and dragging, but when we go to Mall, lads, we run them. Or, you know, every scrum we set, that's our point where we reflect, where we win the niggle battle, as opposed to getting involved in sideshows. And look, I don't want to, again, Connacht were brilliant and they won all those little battles and, you know, came out on top, not only in the scoreboard, but, you know, it is brilliant for Connacht now, and hopefully it's a kind of launch point because they've beaten all three of provinces this year, which, you know, it's just consistency of performance is what Andy Friend and that group needs now.
Good game at the RDS as well, Leinster and Ulster. That was high octane.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It really was. Like I'm saying, I'd watch Interpros every day of the week now at the moment. They have been fantastic. And look, I think, you know, when we're looking at, you know, when we now know we're going to get a final, but I think, you know, everyone's nearly hoping for Connacht to go on and beat Benetton, because they could end up being, for a team that won no league game, to represent us in the North versus South, the two conferences side of it with the South Africans would be kind of unusual for me. But it was brilliant to see Cale and Doris back, and he's back. You just love these guys. We were chatting about Brian O'Driscoll, but they come back at the pace and ready to go. If I'm bitching and moaning, I didn't like that, you know, the captain's challenge was used to flag something on Robbie Henshaw. I just thought cheap, and I don't like that rule one bit. Whatever about not liking it, I don't think it should be used in that manner. I think it's low to question other players. You know, if Robbie lost out in the Lions tour over something there, you would have been, well, I would have been really disappointed.
But the tackle on Ballacoon, which was, you know, a big focus over the weekend, like, I saw it initially, I was thinking he's in serious trouble here. And then, I don't know, you're, well, as from a professional's perspective or a former professional's perspective, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I think it is below the shoulder and kind of slides up a bit. I thought it was clean. It was on the line, though, Damien. It was like, any, honestly, a millimetre higher and he's gone. And yeah, he's gone for a bit of time where it's really expensive, you know. I'm just getting a little bit worried about some of our lines that are out there. I'd nearly wrap them in bubble wrap now and sit them down a while. You know, like, we don't need them in rainbow cups. They played enough rugby. Let's just make sure they all get out there, they're safe, well, and able to kind of represent us.
But the other side of that coin is, where's the advantage in the guys playing for the Lions rather than playing for the clubs that's, or the provinces that are paying them? Why, how can you expect Leinster, Munster, Ulster, anybody to sit down guys whose wages they're paying to go and play in a competition that's of...
It's a little bit different than that, because you know they're going anyway. What's left? Three games, Damien, is that if they're lucky?
If they make the final, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, Ruby, we're all looking, normally a Lions year is a chance to give opportunity to younger guys. I'd like to see it now. I know you have to do right by your squad and use a few of your players that might actually be leaving and show them the respect, but I wouldn't be any bit disappointed, because there's enough niggle in those games. There's enough. They're a little bit higher. We're really lucky. Our Pro 14 games our Interpros are much sharper. They're closest to the level of European than they are to a normal Pro 14 game, if you know what I'm saying. A game against one of the home Interpros or the home provinces has greater value. So I wouldn't mind standing down a few of them and just making sure they're right. Of course, everyone wants to go out and see Lions, but like, are you too bothered if you see, you know, Tadhg Furlong playing for the rest of the year and then having a brilliant summer tour? It wouldn't bother me in the slightest.
Dunica, can I ask you, just, we've obviously, and again, we've talked about this before, you and I, that, you know, the Pro 14, the organisers' hands have been tied with so much this season, and the Rainbow Cup hasn't ended up being what they would have expected it to have been. But then we had the goalposts moved again ever so slightly last week with the announcement that there's going to be this Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere final, which now means you have to finish top dog.
Yeah.
Is that okay? You can look at it and go, fair play to them, they're going to have one overall winner. Or you can look at it the other way and go, well, hang on a second, there were teams that were planning to try and get into the top two and see where it takes them from there, and now you discover with two or three games played that there's only going to be one advancing.
Yeah, and look, it's been disappointing all the time, to be honest. I mean, there's no justifying the way that competition has gone. We had plans and thought that it was going to be something different. It is down to COVID, and you know they're doing their best, but just even for the integrity of the competition, I think it will be quite good if that game does go ahead. You want to see the South African teams. I know it might only be one match, but I would think they would want it to be a kind of an Irish province or an Ospreys or Glasgow. I think they'll all be quite surprised if we all see Benetton versus the Blues as the first Rainbow Cup final. So look, it hasn't been ideal, but I think they're doing their best. And actually, I'd rather a shootout than two teams going up against it and all seeing another Interpro final.
Okay. And then just to finish on this, the big challenge they're going to face then over the next couple of weeks is, you look at the table, you've Benetton on top, 14 points from three games. You start to filter down to Connacht in seventh on 9 points. You would think if results go their way, particularly if they beat Benetton, can still be in the mix. Yeah. But you've Dragon Scarlets, Edinburgh, Zebre and Ulster. You are going to start having dead rubber matches, which is going to then impact on the top end of the table.
Yeah, but that happens the whole time, Damien. And it's really funny watching the Gallagher Premiership at the moment, where everyone is so careful about getting rid of relegation. They don't want relegation. So this year they have actually got rid of it. And some of the rugby's been brilliant. Like, you're watching Wasps putting in 40 points. You know, there's that lack of pressure. So hopefully that comes about with these kind of, maybe not dead rubber, you're right, it's that type of a game. But could you put a few young fellas out there and leave them express themselves and put in big performances?
Okay, come here, we've a text in before we go to the break to 51552. On the FA Cup final, was Casper Schmeichel's save from Mason Mount's shot on goal, or is there a better save? Also, you should discuss John Kiely. He reminds me of Alex Ferguson and Jim Gavin, always moaning and complaining when they don't win. It's boring. Discuss, Ruby.
I think we'll discuss it after the break, Damien. I don't know about that, but anyway, take the break first.
Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on. Hurling.
Welcome back to Game On. Obviously, last weekend did see the second round of the Allianz Hurling League take place, and with it came the first defeat for Limerick since Kilkenny beat him in the All-Ireland semi-final back in 2019. Niall Moran joins us on the line. Galway beat your beloved Limerick by 6. Is it the start of the decline, or have Limerick got things to worry about?
Yeah, we're at the bottom of the pile now again. It seems
gone. It's all over.
It's great there. It's back. We're chasing Galway and we're chasing all these other teams. Look, I suppose it was always going to happen that a team was going to pick you off. I suppose later in the show you probably get on to John's words that he had at the end of the game. Look, yesterday Limerick were probably, they're short 4 or 5 lads. They were a little bit off in how they played, and obviously there was never going to be anything much between Limerick and Galway. And today Galway were sharper, or a little bit hungrier. Limerick made some errors, you know what I mean? So, look, we were under no illusions before it, and we're definitely under no illusions after it, that there is probably a target on Limerick's back, but there's nothing between any of these teams. And again, there's maybe a little bit of lazy kind of journalism over the last couple of months to say that Limerick's that far ahead of everybody and that they might be new Dublin. With due respect, I don't think anybody in Limerick has ever said that, and most especially John Kiely. But look, he'd be frustrated. I know he was frustrated with maybe the administration of the game, but he'd probably be frustrated with some of the performances of his own players. I think that probably will go on every bit as much as maybe some of the refereeing decisions.
Would you like to be a Limerick player back in training this week after that performance?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And it's not so much, I suppose, the expectation from themselves I'd say the grilling that they're going to give themselves will be fairly large scale. Like, you know, like their game is kind of predicated on accuracy, execution of skills, under pressure, I suppose discipline, and on a number of occasions they're just a little bit off. Okay, and in the nature of the game is if they're a little bit off, then their game is off. And I suppose their last feed priority yesterday was against Kilkenny above Croke Park, and there was elements of the game that day that were just slightly off. You could have seen it from the start, and yesterday there was a kind of similar replication of it. And look, you have to acknowledge too, like John gave his head to three or four lads there yesterday, and you know, yesterday it mightn't have worked out that way, but if you can be sure of it, there's a huge game coming against Waterford next week, because Limerick will, they won't want to be defeated, because if they're defeated it now means that they'll have a draw and two defeats under them, whereas if they turn around and get a win, then, you know what I mean, you're just putting down as a hiccup. But look, the target's on your back, and I suppose the evolution of some teams, Galway, Cork in particular, like they're coming with game plans that are going to suffocate Limerick as best they can, and if games maybe are refereed in the way that they have to date, then like Limerick might come under a bit more pressure. But yeah, look, it is what it is. Still, it's the league. Limerick are down 4 or 5, they won't be panicking too much, but they will be frustrated from the team.
But Niall, a lot of, and we'll hear the clip of John Kiely in a moment, and we'll touch on his comments about the rule changes, and you know, his suggestion that there might have been plenty of simulation in the game yesterday. But Galway haven't really been focused upon in an awful lot of the post-match analysis, and they probably deserve great credit for not only the work that was done up until the latter stages of the championship last year, but they have come back and they've built on it significantly.
They have, and like the calibre of their players is immense. Most of them still have All-Ireland medals in their pockets. The guys coming in have All-Ireland minors and under-21s. And you know, it wouldn't have taken a whole pile in 2018 if they hadn't gone to a replay against Clare. I think Limerick may have struggled to beat them in the final. So, of course, they know they have a team. They have a team with some of their, so I suppose, their leading talisman coming nearer the end of their careers, similar to what Tip probably had in 2019. They have a very smart management under them. So, like, all the parts of the puzzle are there for Galway. And they were there last year, too, when he went up to Croke Park. And again, it was small margins, like Joe Calmany went off, Joe Canning went off. That's the margins that will be there when it comes to the end of the year. And there are the margins that were always going to be there. So, yeah, and Galway, I think, probably really laid out a signal of intent against Westmeath last week. And sometimes people disregard the results against the so-called weaker teams. But when you see strong teams obliterating, and which they did, Westmeath, then take notice, because that teams were on their game mentally, if nothing else.
No doubt, though, Niall, the talking point of the weekend probably was John Kiley's comments, and I suppose the simulation, shall we use those words? I think Damon is going to play the clip here and we'll hear it first.
Yeah, here's what John Kiely had to say about the rule changes and everything else when he spoke to Sporting Limerick.
It does appear that the game has changed in the last 4 months whilst we've all been at home, and somebody has decided to take the tackle out of the game. I'd love to know who they were and when that was decided, because we had nobody here watching the game today, and 12 months time we're not going to have anybody here watching it. If it's 36 frees, they're going to be sitting down to watch, and however number of restarts, maybe 60 restarts, and however number of sidelines, you know, I think the people at home today were saved €20, because that wasn't a spectacle that anybody would like to be a part of. The referee's interpretation of the rules and our understanding of that is at an all-time low, in my opinion. We don't really clearly know what it is that we're expected to do.
Niall Moran, what do you make of that? What are Limerick hurlers supposed to do or expected to do?
Or hurlers across the entire league?
Yeah, I suppose, look, John, he voiced his frustrations there yesterday. John's a very measured guy, and I don't think we've probably, it's been rare enough that we've heard kind of similar outbursts on him. And I think if you were to actually ask the John Kiely today, would he have said it? I think he would. But I think what he would have added was, he would have added the solution, okay? Like, the problem was obvious. Again, when you're not at the game, okay, and you're only watching the television, you are missing a lot of what happened. One thing that stood out to me with about 5 minutes left, Nicky Quaid looked up to hit out a puck out at one stage, and you could see the animation and that he had no runners. To me, watching at home, what I felt was probably happening was that he wasn't allowed to have runners because they were being stopped, possibly illegally. It wasn't being punished. And then when maybe something similar happened on the other side, Limerick were being punished. So I think if you asked John Kiely today, he'd have given you probably what the solution was. And I think Ruby, or sorry, Donegal rather,
he touched on it earlier on when he spoke about the kind of Nigel Owens and looking at sessions. At no stage in GAA or hurling have we a culture of engaging properly at referees. Every time that you engage with a referee, it's seen as you're punished for it. It's seen as an attack on something. We have very little lines of communication during a game with referees, and probably more importantly is we have no line of communication post a game or pre a game. In the rugby context, I'm sure it would have happened on the back of a number of games yesterday. It was just funny that John had touched on it, because there was probably three or four other games, the Westmead game, the Tipperary game. Do you know what I mean? They could have all, like, I know Shane O'Brien from Westmead expressed similar sentiments. But what I'm trying to say here is, well, following on from these games this weekend, like, I would imagine that there is some protocol for referees to review games, which obviously there is, but they should be coming together, putting through a video clip of these kind of controversial incidents, and incidents that were punished in the right, and incidents that were punished in the wrong. And management, okay, should be maybe educated on what exactly is expected in a tackle. Why exactly are a fella being penalised? And then I don't see why, the way the game has gone, that maybe have a Friday night similar to rugby, that you have, in yesterday, Limerick's case there, James Owens refereeing the game. Well, James, he kind of, there is some contact with both teams to say, this is my interpretation of a tackle, okay, because there is multiple interpretations of a tackle. Like, I'm still involved as a player, and obviously been exposed to a number of coaches all over the years, and like, the coaches coach it very, very differently. I know Don O'Grady, who's obviously Cork, he had this interpretation of using the aeroplane in terms of how you hold your hands, whereas other coaches would have one hand in, one hand out. So coaches' interpretation of the tackle, it varies enormously, which obviously means that referees' interpretation of it varies enormously. And I just think in Limerick's case yesterday, they were punished in some cases, not all cases, because they were sloppy. In some cases, they were punished unfairly. And I think by opening up that line of communication in a mature, measured fashion, I think we'd eradicate a lot of what's gone on the last couple of weeks.
But Niall, is there a willingness to do that, though?
From the GAA, I don't really think so. It's something that we have never engaged in thus far. But really, if you ask me after the weekend, like, one of the most concerning, disconcerting things was the Cork-Tipperary game. Two teams who were traditionally really free-flowing hurling. Like, they played a bastardised version of football, all right? And I suppose if we look back to football, going back to the incident with, Tyrone and Kerry, the time that they crashed Dara Shea and co inside under the Hogan stand, like, that represented a seminal moment in football where, like, the language changed around it, where things such as, like, the swarm tackle and, do you know what I mean, turnovers, tackle count, that became the new language of the game. And I think in hurling over the last, and maybe even since probably Limerick last year, we've probably bastardised it in some shape or form, where we are seeing the game evolve into another form of football. And like, there was incidents across the games yesterday. Like, we had cornerbacks, Shane Rex scoring for his first ever point for Wexford, Kyle Barrett scoring for Tipperary for cornerbacks. Do you know what I mean? Crowding of zones. We are now seeing a bastardised game of hurling. And I think that will be, the issues that John Rose brought up yesterday, they can be solved fairly easily through maybe communication, okay? But the other issues are, that's what's really going to lead to people not going to matches, because it is becoming harder to watch. And then this is the game that we always held it over to football guys, that we have the game. Well, if you're looking at the weekend's games, I tell you, I'd much rather watch David Clifford and Co below and Kerry than any of the hurling games that were played this weekend.
Yeah, but no, I think for me, as a fan, that's all I am of hurling, as a fan. I thought John Kiley's other comments were more concerning, like when a player has the ball and they run at you and throw yourselves on the ground and they're roaring and shouting, that's embarrassing, that's not part of the game. Simulation, that's more worrying for hurling fans than anything else.
Yeah, but good refereeing will eradicate that. So, I mean, that's gamesmanship. Gamesmanship has always been in games, and it's the nature in which you can get away with it. But I think the fear, the frustrations from John might have kind of arisen last week against Tipperary, and probably kept his powder dry. And then, I suppose, yesterday it all came to the fore. Was it simulation? Yeah, but there's always been simulation. And do guys always get away with it? No. Did the referee buy this case? Yeah. I probably, again, when you're not at the game, but I think the frustration for John might have been things that went unpunished on the other side as well, that we didn't necessarily see on TV screens.
No, just on it, like we're seeing 36 to 40 free kicks. The flow of the game is going a little bit. You're seeing lateral passing, short poke outs, no, long shots. Are we losing the game a little bit?
Again, what I said earlier, Donegal, was it's becoming a bastardised version of the game. Like if we look at what football took its leaf a lot maybe from maybe rugby league, the nature of basketball. Okay, and like rugby league has become a fairly tough game to watch. Even rugby union, which you respect your own game, Donica. Do you know what I mean? It's trying to free itself from the chains of the way the game has gone. I think in terms of hurling, we're now facing that prospect where we have to untangle ourselves from some of the things that have been coached into lads. Like this idea of puck outs going to the 21 and back to the goalie. Like they're all versions of football. Do you know what I mean? And like our game, like we want to see our game played at its best. So the first thing for any rule makers and decision makers in the GAA to do is, well, establish clearly when does our game look at its best. And if you ask me, I would say it's a combination between the 09-10 finals involving Tip and Kilkenny. You mix in a bit of the 13 All-Irelands with Clare and Cork, and then elements of even what Limerick have done, Galway have done, then you have the game at its best. But at the moment we're seeing the game kind of filtrate through into what isn't that we don't want. And again, so what we need to do is, you might have to change slight rules, or you might have to go drastic. And the drastic calls are, make the ball heavier. The ball is in place. This has been a common complaint from Jay or hurling people for the last couple of years. Make that ball heavier. They do have the ball. They can do it. It's not going to affect the safety. Okay, your pitch is your pitch. It's not going to change. Or you go about reducing your numbers. But as it stands, if this game goes on like this, like it was played this weekend, okay, we're not going to be sensational. Next weekend it could be a totally different game. But if it's like this again, that team continues, then the GAA will have to look at the bigger issue. And again, to me, the bigger issue of the game is the bastardising of it coming into football.
Well, every issue needs a solution. And Niall Moore, and you certainly have a couple of them. Thank you very much for taking our call. We'll be back after the break. We have soccer and GAA football to get through yet.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game on football.
Yeah, another busy weekend of soccer. We're delighted to be joined by Stephen Kelly. Stephen, how are you?
How's it going? Donna's out, Ruby?
Great, Donna. Or Stephen, yourself, how are you?
Not too bad.
Stephen, we'll get on to the FA Cup final, but it was a disappointing on both fronts for Chelsea this weekend, not only with the game against Leicester, but the Champions League final. 4-0 down after 30-odd minutes, you know, you must feel for them.
Yeah, it was a tough watch. No really high hopes from going into the game, but Barcelona were a special side. They really dominated the game, and just it was like a boxing match. They just didn't get off the floor after the first few punches. It was unbelievable how well and quick they counterattacked them and played the ball. You know, nothing away from what Chelsea have done this season, and she was on for the quadruple as well, which would have been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a tough watch.
Stephen, is there learnings in it for them? Do you see, like, because we look at Barcelona 2 years ago, the exact same thing happened then. Can they come back from it, and, you know, do they see a new level?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And like they're at the peak of their powers in England, and they obviously know that this is a different level above, and they need to be able to compete on the European stage. And it's been a long time since an English team has won that. Arsenal won it in 2007. Actually, Lemma Hayes was a coach for that side as well, so she's been there, she's done it before. And you kind of feel like they, going forward, they'll take points from it, they'll build on it, and it's a learning curve. It really has to be.
Yeah, when we look at the FA Cup final, then whatever about the game, I know it certainly had big moments, but even having crowds there, Stephen, certainly added to it, made it feel like proper, you know, FA Cup finals in May.
It felt like an FA Cup final of old. It really felt like, you know, one of those games where, you know, years ago people would always watch the FA Cup final. It was a big thing to build up to, and, you know, even though the game, whatever that's gone at the season, the match itself delivered in, like, there was tension the last few minutes of the game, the saves from Schmeichel, the goal was just what a goal to win a game. You know, if there was a goal to win a game, what a strike from Tielemans. But the Oliver play, the VAR decision, you know, there was loads of different parts of the game. But then on top of all that, to have the fans there and to see their roller coaster of emotion throughout the game, it was wonderful to be be to see.
Have you seen the clip of the Chelsea fans when they thought they equalised?
I have, yeah.
Ruby Dunnock, have you seen it?
Yeah, I did.
It's phenomenal.
You can imagine the emotions of it. Or even then, I didn't see the one of the lesser fans on the other side. Like, they go one up, Schmeichel makes a save, and then the inevitable equaliser arrives. You're thinking, oh my God. And then VAR does the right thing.
For the equaliser to come from Chilwell as well, that was like a dagger in the heart for him. And then the emotions to flip for it to be disallowed. Can you imagine the feeling? It must be amazing.
We always perhaps side for an Irish angle in all of this, but you look at it from a Brendan Rodgers perspective. How important is it for him? And I don't want to dismiss what it was he did with Celtic, but how important is it for the career of Brendan Rodgers to have some major silverware to justify what was a very big reputation, which maybe some people have tried to batter in recent years?
Huge, absolutely huge, because for all the good he did at Liverpool and for the reputation he built up there in the Premier League, to not come away with anything and to falter in the way that he did and to lose the league with that Gerrard slip, which you all remember so well, that tarnished him in the Premier League for a little while. So to come into this Leicester side, he's got a lot of grace now, because the way his team have been playing, the way they've been pushing last season, they pushed really hard and they were looking like the closest contenders to Liverpool, but the way they fell away, there was a question mark then this season, whereas now they've come back again and they've been fighting right till the death. They've won a major trophy. They're going to be in the Champions League next season as well. You know, he's shown that this team are now a different level, and what he's done with those players and the way they're playing football, I think his reputation is as high as it's ever been.
Are you sure they're going to be in the Champions League next year? Chelsea tomorrow night, Liverpool getting hot in their heels after Alisson saved them at the weekend.
I know, it's funny, for me, Leicester were the ones that were going to drop out. That's what I felt. I couldn't see Chelsea slipping up. I just thought Chelsea were just a bit robotic and they were just going to get through games and win. But I think Leicester are in it now. I think that those 2 points is a cushion. Liverpool trying to catch Leicester, there's obviously more of a chance of catching Chelsea, but the fixtures are brilliant. Like, Chelsea and Spurs both play Villa and Leicester in the last two games of the season, and then Liverpool have Palace and Burnley. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting, and it makes for a great watch.
What did you make of Alisson's goal? Like, even for a defender, like, what did you think when you used to see a goalkeeper coming forward? Dunnigan maintained when he came to get in the way anyway, but like, he's trotting up. As you're a defender, what are you thinking? Who's picking him up? Who's marking him? Do you even see him coming?
You don't. When you see him come in, you kind of think, right, get someone on him, but you kind of don't think realistically that he's going to score a header the way he did. You don't think he's going to technically be able to get up and bend his neck and flick into that corner. You kind of just think he's going to be in there, he's going to be in essence, he's going to bundle himself about and maybe cause carnage, and the ball's going to drop to someone else or it might drop to him. You don't realistically think he's going to do that, and the ball in was just wonderful, but the way he executed the goal, like, he was like, he's a centre forward, he's like Duncan Ferguson of all. Like, it was an unbelievable header. Like,
there was a cracking header. Look, and I think in the weekend that it was, with Alisson scoring and the FA Cup final went on, different things would have got overlooked. But I remember I watched Leeds and Burnley this morning, actually watching the back. Melier was incredible in the Leeds goal.
Incredible. He was absolutely... they're talking in the commentary about him today. Goalkeeper, and it wasn't far off. He was unbelievable. Some of the saves he pulled off were just outstanding. And he's been like that for a lot of the season. Leeds play a really open, expansive game, and they leave themselves open to counter-attacks, and he's done extremely, really well for them. And Leeds, again, another side that just great to watch, good value for money, never disappoints when it comes to goals as well, either end. So, no, it was a really good performance.
Only two games left for everybody. Harry Kane is just managing to keep himself at the top of the goal scoring charts. Spurs beat Wolves 2-0. Can he stay there, or will Mo Salah peg him back?
Mo's goal as well the weekend was excellent, and Kane could have had a couple. He hit the post, was put through by Dele Alli as well, with a really good opportunity. So it's going to be really tight, but both of them are almost neck and neck with each other. Good games, but you kind of feel Liverpool with the opponents they're playing against will probably get a few more opportunities at goal than what Kane will get. So you kind of think possibly Salah could pip it, but you know, Kane, the goal scoring from him, and his accuracy when he shoots is just off the charts. It's unbelievable when he gets through on goal how often he hits the target.
I thought that was remarkable to watch, actually, in the Spurs Wolves game when Kane hit the post, it comes flying back out, and Dele Alli hit the other one. It's almost comical to watch it.
I thought this is going to end up in a bad result for us here. I thought that's going to, when that happens, you couldn't go, this is going to go one way.
Stephen, Spurs host Villa on Wednesday, 6 o'clock. Do you expect that to be Kane's last home game for Spurs?
No. No.
You think he'll stay?
And it's not, I don't think he's... This is the thing. I think for him, going would be the right decision. And that's me saying it, you know, with a heavy heart. I don't want him to leave. I wouldn't want him to leave. I don't want to see Tottenham lose a player that... The reality is, who can afford him? Who's going to buy him? And is Daniel Levy going to accept the money that he wants for him? That's more of the issue than Harry Kane actually wanting to go. I think he's got a long time left in his contract, and it's going to be down to those negotiations. He'll probably push. If Tottenham end up in that ridiculous conference, Europa Conference League, yeah, then it's not going to be very good for him. But for himself, football-wise, I think, age he's at, the way he's playing with England, he could go to any club in the world and be a star for them. Can they afford him, and will Tottenham sell him? And I think that's probably what won't happen.
Can I finish on a bit of a trivia teaser? The three of you, one of you is bound to have seen this on Twitter over the weekend. So Leicester won the FA Cup for the first time in their history, obviously, on Saturday. So they can now partake in a tradition within English football for the first time. Do you know what it is?
No.
Charity Shield?
No. Anyone? Not sure. They would have played in the Charity Shield when they won the Premier League.
Yeah, so they won the league, of course. Yeah,
it's
exactly
not that.
Yeah.
You're on a tight ship here, yeah. Stephen.
Okay,
sorry.
I'll give you a clue. Yeah, it relates to the stadium and the pitch.
Wembley.
No, home ground. Yeah. Will I give you the answer, or yes, will we leave it and see if anyone gets it on text?
Yeah, give us the answer.
We won't. We'll tell you next Monday. So see if someone else texts in the answer after the play. It's half time between Bournemouth and Burnley, or Brentford even, in the playoff semi final first leg. We'll be back after the break. Stephen Kelly, you can have the answer next Monday. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast filling. 100% natural and packed with flavour. Game on.
Gaelic football.
So last weekend saw the first weekend's action in the Allianz Football League. The Dublin juggernaut rolled on and they steamrolled Roscommon. Kildare pretty much did the same to Cork, but I think we will have to start in Tralee, where Kerry were 4-21 to 11 point winners over Galway. It was the Clifford Show, Aidan O'Rourke, between Davy and his brother. They were just unstoppable.
Phenomenal. I mean, I suppose David Clifford probably represents what you think about when you think about Kerry football at the moment, and he's everything that's good about the game at the moment, and certainly at the weekend he wasn't on his own. I mean, they have attacking talent coming out their ears and options everywhere once they have the ball, and Galway unfortunately didn't bring their A game, and the result was pretty one-sided.
It was a great game to watch. I mean, even Dermot Clifford getting his goal, but goals are key to winning football matches, and they just knew how to find the net at the weekend. Were Galway that poor, or were Kerry that good?
Well, I think a mixture of both. And I mean, you can't gloss over how good Kerry were. I mean, they were phenomenal when they had the ball. Speed they moved it at, the intensity they played with, the quality of their passing, quality of their handling. I mean, it's the things that you speak to players about all of the time, you know, and that runs really well in training quite a bit when teams going well, but you rarely see it functioning at that level in a competitive game. So Kerry were irresistible for big parts of it, but I probably have to say how disappointed I was in Galway. First few minutes Kerry got a jump on them, and there were difficult moments for them, but Park used to be really disappointed with the attitude of the players, how quickly they dropped their heads, how little fight was in them. So all of that, you know, fundamentally would have been very, very disappointing from a Galway perspective. Also worth pointing out, Kerry are the best attacking unit in the country. They've exceptional footballers when they have the ball, but you don't face that with a man for man defensive scenario where you're giving them as much space as they want to create. I thought Galway were fairly naive in how they approached the game.
Yeah, but Aidan, we look at the focus that was on the management in advance of the game, and you know, we've had players come out to quell rumours around the county over the last couple of months. You know, the result will obviously put smiles back on faces, but how much work is still to be done by Peter Keane to turn them, do you think, into real credible All-Ireland contenders come the end of the year? Because it's too hard a game, the one-sided nature of it, to ultimately judge that on yet.
Yes, we learned nothing about those questions at the weekend. Anything that they produced, as good as it was, none of it was anything that we didn't know they could produce already. And given the time and space that Galway gave them to play, I really wouldn't have expected anything else. The real tests come when teams set up as Cork did last year to frustrate them, take away the space from them and make them try and create scoring opportunities under pressure. That certainly wasn't the case at the weekend. So in terms of All-Ireland credentials, we didn't learn anything in Tralee. That's not to dismiss the possibility that Kerry are sitting on Dublin's shoulder at this point in time. That's a distinct possibility, depending on, you know, how much progress they've been able to make over the last 4 or 6 weeks. But Tralee at the weekend certainly wasn't the answer to all those questions.
Hey, look, it was the first weekend of the league and there was good wins for Donegal, Mayo as well. Armagh looked very good, but the big talking point I got from watching the Sunday game last night was the penalty rule. Look, there was one in the Mayo down game, Tommy Conroy not given against him. There was one given against Darragh Canavan. Paddy Small got one as well. What was your take on this, and how are the GAA going to iron out the issue between somebody being fouled that doesn't have a goal scoring opportunity and somebody being fouled that does?
Yeah, I'm happy to admit that an Armagh man, Monaghan, should have had one as well, that the referee missed. It's really difficult. I mean, you ask how they're going to iron it out. They're not going to iron it out under the current rules. So what they have set out is, there's so much grey area with it. There's so much, inverted commas, interpretation, referee's opinion, that it really can't be implemented consistently. And, you know, in any sport in the world, all people are asking for is consistency, because if you know what is and what isn't going to be given, then you can react and play accordingly. But at the moment, not unlike some of the hurling issues, we really don't know what the rules are, and we really don't know what is going to be a penalty and a black card and sin bin. And that's not a state of affairs that can continue. I really think it has to be looked at before we get to Championship. Okay, we're in the league now, and league games are still very important, but one or two games were, I suppose, basically ruined through decision making in this area, and it's not going to get any better next weekend or the weekend after.
Is it possible for one referee to manage a game the size of a GAA pitch? When you look at soccer and rugby, smaller pitches and all the additional help referees get, is it possible for one man in the middle, not getting much help from umpires or linesmen, to actually run the show?
No, absolutely not. I mean, that's before we even get to the last 2 years of new rules that have been introduced. I've been banging this drum for a few years now. It should be referee and teams. I mean, we have three inter-county referees on the pitch for every game. There's two on the sidelines who are given minimal responsibility, and somebody with the weight of the world on their shoulders in the middle. And actually, it should be three referees moving through the pitch. That's how it should be. The referee, the linesmen can take care of when the ball goes over the line or not, as well as move on to the field and help administer what is completely ridiculous at this stage weight of rules and regulations that have to be applied to the game.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Three refs would definitely help at all. I think we're just about out of time, Aidan. Thanks a million for taking our call. Myself and Dunners will be back tomorrow night. Damien, thanks for all your help.